the chairperson of the standing committee on defense. She gives bigger issues in defense. I think it's not the issue. But she's got style. She looks very stylish every morning. Good morning, Madam Dodo. How are you?
Fine.
You know that one that every time you read about MKMBA, that's the lady there. And she's advised, she's a big lady. She advised the president, you know. And that is Mr. Mlambo. I know you, man. I'm coming to you, David. Don't create problems. And that is David Manier. He gives me all the problems and headache. And that is Mr. Mlambo there. He's very new in Parliament. He's even put classes for himself now. Morning, sir. How are you? Members, we started the other. Oh, yeah, started the other. Would want to introduce each other. Tabo, I don't see the sector.
He is with Minister at Cabinet at the moment. He'll be joining us a little bit later.
By the time he joins us, we'll be finished.
I don't know.
And secondly, you see, when the department comes to us, he's supposed to lead the delegation so that he introduces the department. Unless he wants us to undermine him and deal directly with people in the department. That's a little bit of a problem.
Okay.
All these years, we've always made sure that the Secretary of Defense becomes a person who introduces people to the portfolio committee. So that it's always clear that we talk to the department through the Secretary of Defense. We don't want to deal directly with the department without the head that keeps them, that is accountable to us, and letting us who is he bringing to the committee. We'll forgive him today, but next time.
Noted, Chairperson, and our apologies.
Yes, I know that they are really trying to do everything with the ministers together, but we also need him to come and talk to us. Maybe between yourself and Mandy, you must arrange it just properly. So that next time you just come and introduce the people and disappear. Yeah, we just have to do that. But good morning, Tao. And good morning, Mr. Kepler, and people from the department. You will introduce yourself to my colleagues here so that you alert us with the issue that you're going to be dealing with. But I must say to, I was showing my other co-chair here that I had come across your history and the work that they're doing, the topic that you are going to take us through, it looks as if you're well-versed about it. And I'm very glad to get a person of your caliber within the SANDF. That is very much important. Thanks a lot. And thanks for your contribution to help our country like this. Thanks a lot. Members of Parliament, I do have a profile that talks to us about him and the awards he's been winning. They say around this area is one of the United Kingdom is recognizing him for the efforts that he has put in into this particular area. Dr. Jal, can I start with you to introduce yourself so that everybody can introduce himself?
Oh.
Yes.
Honorable Chair, my name is Nelson Diale, the ANC member of the Portfolio Committee of Defense. Thank you.
Morning, Dr. My name is Kengwe Mkabadeni, as a chairperson. I'm a member. I'm an ANC member. Thank you. My name is Ayanda Dodlo, a member of the Portfolio Committee from the ANC.
Emmanuel Mosawengosi Mlambo, ANC member and a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
My name is David Mania. I'm still a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans.
I'm Maggie Finnegan. I'm the researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Defence.
My name is Ellen Molikane, head of the Ministry.
My name is Ellen Molikane, head of the Ministry of Defence and Military Veterans.
I am Tabuki Gaba, parliamentary liaison officer for the Ministry of Defence and Military Veterans.
I'm Peter Daniels. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Good morning, I'm Scott McKinney. I'm Scott McKinney from Defense International Affairs Division, from the Defense Secretariat.
Good morning, sir. I'm Rear Admiral Bernard Teuteberg. I'm the Chief Director of Maritime Strategy on the staff of the Chief of the Navy, and I'm representing the Chief of the Navy here. And one of my proteges on my right-hand side who will introduce himself.
Good morning, sir, and honorable members. I'm Captain Aubrey Comfer, the hydrographer of the South African Navy. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's Tepe Mutumi, Acting Secretary for Defense and Military Veterans. Just to send apologies for the Chief of the Navy, who would have liked to be here, but has got other engagements with the Chief of the National Defense Force. And also for the Minister, who is in Cabinet, so you are following us as well. And I'm surprised to see some questions from our side.
I'm Amy Bali, the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, I'm Sandra Albers, also from the Defence International Affairs Division, from the Secretary for the Secretary.
Hi, good morning, Chair and Honourable Members, to the guests. My name is Ntuthuzelo Vanara. I'm Parliament's Legal Advisor, charged with this committee. Thank you.
He's the one who gave us the opinion. Sector, we really thankful that you came. Yes, because I was just advising Otama that it's important for you to come and introduce your staff, you see, that you work with. And then if you've got another commitment, you're quite willing to give you that one. But all the time, let's make sure that you are the one that introduces them to us. You see, it will help all of us. Now, without delay, I'll give over to you, and then so that you could be able to meet. Members of Parliament, I know that this hydrographer, we seem not to know much about it. You know, it's military science, man. Ayanda, I know that you have not trained about it. Don't take it, Ayanda. Hey, I know I won't rest for some few days that you're going to be harassing me. But I do know at least me and you don't know much about it.
As long as you're
not. No, I'm not. Yeah. So we will learn something. So sometime in the portfolio committee meeting, what happens is that we give people to give us an insight of exactly how much they understand the issue so that you could be able to relate to it. You will tell us exactly what you expect us to do in relation to this particular issue. But as I said to you quite earlier, we are really thankful that within the SNDF, that people of your caliber who could do this type of thing. And they are really thankful about it. But when people talk about the SNDF, they think those are the ones that are attacking the seat of government. Those are the only components that are active. No. You are also introducing the other face of the SNDF. Feel very welcome to take us through. The meeting is about you today. Take us through so that you couldn't exactly understand what is expected of us. they are confronted with. Now, what we will do, it looks as if the Secretary of Defense is under pressure to leave us at some stage, am I correct?
Yeah, not before the conference.
Oh, not before the conference, that's good. So we'll give you, and then we'll do the introductions. Okay,
ma'am. Thanks very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. We are before you to make a request for your approval for the amendments to the protocol with respect to the International Hydrographic Organization Convention, an organization we've been belonging to. And when I say we, I mean South Africa, and South Africa, then the implementing agency, or NDC being the National Defense Force, and then in particular in the National Defense Force, the South African Navy, having that particular entity to provide that service, not only to the Navy and for the Navy, but also for and on behalf of all of government, as well as our partners, neighboring states, and then the continent. I'll let Admiral Schwarzenbeck, as well as our captain, to take us through the presentation with respect to the convention, what it's for, and what are the amendments that are being effected to it in the context of the United Nations. Admiral Schwarzenbeck.
Members, in the presentation is conducted.
So as they are taking us through, maybe you should also look at the presentation. Yeah. We'll give it over.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My surname is McGilling, as I've said. So I just want to render a perspective here. Who will be doing what? Mr. Matumi introduced the aim of the presentation to you. I'm sure that everybody is comfortable with that. Then I'll just very briefly render a historic perspective as to why we're here, what processes we followed. And then I'm going to ask Captain, the famous Captain Comfort to deal with his side, the operational technical modalities of our membership, what it entails. I think that will give a very good background as to what the Navy's responsibilities, et cetera. Then I will be discussing the regulatory process. The reason why I'll be doing that is because I was a process manager for the past three years concerning this whole amendment, the approval of the amendment in terms of the Constitution. Very briefly, just discuss the regulatory process, and then after that, we will discuss the protocol of the amendment, the physical amendment itself. If there are any questions, and I presume that there will be questions from the legal side with respect to that, it's highly technical, but it's been presented to the honourable members, so I trust that there will be no problems with that. And then it also deals with the implications for the government of the amendments. And then very, very briefly, just the parliamentary approval, why we're here. And then once we get an answer from Parliament, then we have to notify the Secretariat accordingly through the Chief State Law Advisors at Department of International Cooperation. And then Mr. Matumi will then just very briefly deal with the recommendations. What the Department of Defense recommend to the Portfolio Committee. And then it will be a question and answer session, but sir, you're welcome to intervene at any time, or any member is welcome to intervene and ask questions. I think that will alleviate the question and answer session at the back, at the end of the presentation. So, sir, Mr. Matumi and Sir Chairman, with your permission, can I then proceed, sir? Thank you very much.
Let us back to Parliament. And let debate will take place.
The committee will report, is required to report, to recommend to the House whether it approves or rejects. If it rejects, and goes to the NCLP, and the House, it gets approved or rejects by House resolution.
So why I'm asking that question, though, is I want members to collect as much information as they can. Both amongst you, some of you are going to speak when the debate is to take place in Parliament. Mama Mkabate, I'm looking at you to lead us when we go debate in Parliament. So you must listen. Thank you. No, that's fine. I'm just putting out parliamentary work so that you...
In order to make society to understand
what's happening, we'll just prepare ourselves so that we can give the background on what this thing will have implications for South Africa. Can you go ahead, sir?
Thank you very much, sir. Just on a point of order, Mr. Chair, what time can we just have a look at the time limit here, sir, to not to waste the minute?
No, you go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
I will be
very brief to save time and to allow more questions and answers.
I said, sir, you should give as much information to me.
I will do so, sir.
I'll tell you when it's too much. I know many would raise his hand.
Thank you, sir.
I'll still be the one in charge, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
First of all, South Africa became a member state of the International Hydrographic Organization Convention in 1967. It was ratified by Parliament leading to 1968 in terms of the Constitution. The current membership of the International Hydrographic Organization is 80 members, of which Captain Comfer will elaborate more on. Now, the International Hydrographic Organization is an intergovernmental consultative.
There is a historical perspective number on the device.
Thank you, sir. It's an intergovernmental consultative and technical organization that was established way back in 1921 to support the safety, navigation, and the protection of the maritime environment. Now, the South Africa, or the Republic, is represented by at the International Hydrographic Organization by the South African Navy Hydrographer, which is currently Captain Harvey Comfer, sitting to my right. During the third extraordinary conference that was held in the Principality of Monaco, a resolution was adopted during 2005, the 14th of April 2005, to amend the preamble, as well as 19 articles of the convention. Now, that is the 1967 convention which you have in front of you, in accordance with Article 21 thereof. Article 21 deals with the procedures, the institutional procedures for the amendment of the convention, and it was adopted accordingly. Now, the objective of the protocol of amendment was to improve, the objectives were to improve the scope, the objectives, the capacity and effect of the International Hydrographic Organization Convention. It was an update, basically, during 2005 to ensure that it still complies with the current requirements of a convention of that magnitude and that importance. When we deal with the implications of the 19 articles as well as the preamble that were amended, members will then realize that what exactly it entails. It's entirely of a technical nature. Now, I'm going to ask Captain Comfer, Mr. Chair, with your permission, to proceed with his presentation, which is from an operational and technical point of view, within his ambit. He's the expert on that environment, supported by the Admiral Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have your permission to stand, and I think it will be easier because I need to point at the screen. I don't want to turn my back on the members. So. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honorable members, I've introduced myself. I just want to give a presentation here on the protocol of amendments to the ISO Convention. It is my intention to just give you a very brief introduction to the ISO, then a brief synopsis of the importance of hydrography with respect to SOLAS. SOLAS is Safety of Life at Sea Convention, IMO Convention. I'll go into more depth in that. Then it's very brief, a status report on hydrography in Africa, because I think it's very pertinent here. And then very briefly, the IHO and the proposed amendments. Just to show you this thick document that you received, what it actually means, and the changes that this changes want to achieve. Thank you. Firstly, the International Hydrographic Organization
as Mr. McDougan has said, is an intergovernmental consultative and a technical organization that was established in 1921 to support the safety of navigation and the protection of the marine environment. The objectives you have in front of you, I'm going to read through them very briefly, is promote the use of hydrography for the safety of navigation and all other marine purposes, to raise global awareness of the importance of hydrography, improve global coverage, availability and quality of hydrographic data, information, products and services, and to facilitate access to such data, information, products and services, and improve, again, global hydrographic capability, capacity, training, science and techniques. It goes on, establish and enhance the development of international standards for hydrographic data, information, products, services, techniques, and to achieve the greatest possible uniformity in the use of these standards, also to give authoritative and timely guidance on all hydrographic matters to states and international organizations. Also to facilitate coordination of hydrographic activities amongst member states and enhance cooperation of hydrographic activities amongst states on a regional basis. Mr. McDougan mentioned there's currently 18 member states, and as you can see, Africa is not that well presented in the IHO, but that gives you an idea of who all belongs to the IHO. And I will elaborate further on that. I refer to safety of life at sea convention standards of great importance to us for biographic responsibility. Firstly is Chapter 5, Regulations 4. In fact, the each contracting government, South Africa is a signatory to this convention, so we are a contracting government, so take all steps necessary to ensure that when intelligence of any dangers is received from whatever reliable source, it shall be promptly brought to the knowledge of those concerned and communicated to other interested governments. Now, to achieve that, the whole world was divided into NAD areas. And as you can see, South Africa is the NAD Area Coordinator 7. We are responsible to achieve that convention, that regulation in that area. So we are responsible. That's been done from the Hydrographic Office. So that goes on in Regulation 9, where you get more into the nuts and bolts of hydrography. Contracting governments, again, undertake to arrange for the collection and compilation of hydrographic data and the publication, dissemination, and keeping up to date of all nautical information necessary for safe navigation. And that is charge publication facility. It also goes on further. In particular, contracting governments undertake in a manner most suitable for the purpose of aiding navigation to ensure that hydrographic surveys are carried out, to prepare and issue nautical charts, sailing directions, list of lights, tide tables, and other nautical publications. Any changes to that should then be changes will be made to promulgate notices to mariners, keep them informed of new changes, and to provide data management arrangements to support all these services. And that all in a nutshell is what the Hydrographic Office are responsible for on behalf of the government. Goes on to the final paragraph. Contracting governments undertake to ensure the greatest possible uniformity in charts and nautical publications and to take into account, whenever possible, relevant international resolutions and recommendations. The only way that we can do this is to belong to an organization such as the International Hydrographic Organization. In isolation, you cannot achieve that regulation of surveys. Just a little bit more on the United Nations Assembly has made a resolution where it welcomes the work of the IHO. It encourages increased membership. It invites the IHO and the IMO. The IMO is really the nautical arm of the United Nations. It invites their efforts to accelerate transition to electronic charts. Everybody talks about EMCs, electronic charts, and increase increase of coverage of hydrographic information, and it encourages intensified efforts to increase hydrographic capacity in the least developed countries and small island developing states. If you see all the African coastal states that are members of IMO, that's all depicted there in green, it's quite clear that there is definitely a maritime awareness in Africa. If you look at the African ISO member states, it is very few. A couple of us on the bottom of Africa, or in the south, and a couple in the north. When we look at the United Nations resolution, where the United Nations encourage people to become members, of course, then the IHO and the IMO also need to take some action. And to counter that, just to go on, now the end result from few memberships of the IHO, I thought it would be good to share this slide with you. The capacity to produce nautical publications and charts in Africa. Currently, it's only South Africa that can achieve everything that SOLAS arrangements require of us. There's some partial, Mozambique, Nigeria, maybe Senegal, that have a partial. The others, nothing. So how does the IHO then take care of that? Because we do have a responsibility. It's been passed on to us. Also have a mandate from the United Nations. The IHO went off and it divided the whole world again into regional hydrographic commissions. The one of importance to us, SAIC, the Southern Africa and Islands Hydrographic Commission. There's currently, and there's 18, when you include the Hydrographic Commission on Antarctica, but our focus will be on SAIC. If we look at Africa,
the climate change. What about those in grey?
Those, at the time when this slide was prepared, there was very little information from them, but they are not, at that time, they definitely do not have the capacity, I know that.
Okay.
It's all starting up.
They could very well also be red.
They I would say they're very red or at the best partial. Thank you. If we look at Africa, just to give you a better idea, you basically have four regional commissions that cover Africa. Of specific interest to us, the Southern African Island Hydrographic Commission. A bit of history on this commission. When Admiral Teutoburg was hydrographer, he basically led the establishment of such a commission. There was nothing in those days, 95. And since then, the regional commission was now accepted as a very formal part. And it's also formalized in the new convention. But to go back onto this commission, I was the chairman of the Southern Africa Hydrographic Commission for the past 4 years. I'm currently the vice chairman. Unfortunately, the chairperson was excused. So for the past 2 years, I basically continued with the work of SAIC. Now, if you look at the member states of the region, you will notice that we have some European countries also members, and the statutes of this commission makes provision that member states must be ISO members, so former members. Everybody else in the region that are not members of the ISO is associated members. So all the and that was the reason why this was established, to get them to come and bring their problems to the table so that the member states can then look after their needs. And it will become clearer when I go on this. Anyway, the full member is France, Norway, Mozambique, South Africa, the UK, and Mauritius. We are the only members of the IHO in this region. France because of the island properties in the Indian Ocean, Reunion, etc. Norway, the island of Bouvet belongs to Norway, and they have charting responsibility there. The UK, also as the islands of God, Tristan, etc., where they also have chartering responsibilities. Portugal, due to historic reasons, they are accepted as an associate member, and I will refer to them later. So, next slide. Within our organization, we have to make a plan to look at this charting deficiency. We know that our member states, or the majority of the states in our region, do not have the capacity to do hydrographic surveys. The majority of them do not have hydrographic offices. So, in the end, they cannot produce charts. So, under the leadership of the ISO, this area was, the whole world was divided in charting regions. As we have the lab area regions for safety information, we also divided the world into charting regions. Now, again, South Africa is the ISO coordinator for Region H, our area of responsibility, Region H. Now, within Region H, we have divided the responsibility for charting. South Africa takes care of Namibia. Portugal, because of the historic nature of their involvement, they take care of the charting of Angola. They assist Mozambique also because they have a lot of source data. They did a lot of surveys in that area. Then you have France, responsible for the area around the islands to do the charting and surveying in that area. And the UK takes care of the rest. So in a nutshell, within our region, we take care of those countries that do not have the capacity to survey and to charting.
That makes the regional commission so important and vital. As far as the responsibilities of the IHO, or objectives of the IHO rather, is to create capacity. I just want to include this slide very quickly. All the countries in Africa that have received formal capacity assistance from the IHO, now firstly, the IHO cannot force things on people because all these capacity efforts are arranged through the regional commission. So there's agreement within the commission that certain countries require capacity, it's determined what kind of capacity requirement, and basically they follow a phased approach, where phase one is safety information. Phase two is the ability to survey, to conduct hydrographic surveys. Phase three, the final phase, is cartography, to create charts. And we follow that phase approach. And the majority of these capacity building efforts was through technical research, giving advice on establishing hydrographic offices, giving advice on entering into bilateral arrangements with other countries that can assist, etc. Myself, as an IHO member state, I was involved in technical visits in our region, in Namibia, in Malawi, in Mozambique, in Kenya, Tanzania, and also Uganda. While we visited, you will ask, but Malawi and Uganda are not coastal states, but they've got enormous lakes, and we know that they also have big problems with safety and navigation of those lakes. And that was the reason why we also visited those countries and looked at the requirements, and we addressed those requirements within our regional commission. I'm also responsible within SAIC for the capacity building register for SAIC. So we basically keep a register and we motivate those efforts linked to the ISO capacity building committee. The last capacity committee actually awarded for our region a sum of €42,000 for capacity building for 2010, which I think is a major achievement. If I repeat some of the things that were said by Mr. Matuli, excuse me, but I think just for completeness, to reiterate that South Africa became a member of the IHO in 1951. The convention was ratified in 1968 by the Parliament, and then at the third Extraordinary Hydrographic Conference in April 2005, there was a protocol of amendments that was approved, and that's now in
front of us. In the 4 years since the approval of the protocol of amendments in the conference, only 23 member states have indicated the approval of the protocol of amendments. And I'm sure you have read them there. It's Australia, Cuba, Cyprus, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Japan, Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Republic of Latvia, Mexico, Morocco, South African states, Netherlands, Norway, Pakistan, Qatar, Spain, Sweden, Tunisia, and United Kingdom. So far in Africa, only 2 countries. Now, everything in this convention really goes about changing the structure and the rules of the new business. Now, if you look at the old structure of the ISO, the ISO is really member states, 80 member states, that's the ISO. All decisions are made there at the conference. Now, the information to the conference to make decisions on comes from the working groups, and there's various of them, and they've got sub-working groups, and over there you have the regional commissions, and then we have, in Monaco, the International Hydrographic Bureau, which is really the secretariat. They sit there and they get all the responses from the member states to put it into resolutions that go to the conference, and that's the only place where any decisions get made. But this is a very old structure, and it really started to grow from 1921, and there was a lot of working groups and sub-working groups, and sometimes it was felt very little control. Also, to try and make decisions, the conference only meets in the current convention only every 5 years. So it changes that they now manage to introduce extraordinary conference, but any organization that can only make decisions every 5 years, it really struggles to operate. So the whole idea with the new convention is to improve on decision-making, and you will see when we go through the next slide. Now the proposed model, which is in front of you, it's also trying to bring the IHO in line with other international organizations, like the International Maritime Organization. We talk about an assembly in place of a conference. Assembly meets every 3 years. The secretariat, which is the IHP at the moment, and then that is a total new animal, the council, which also exists in IMO, by the way. The finance committee, the legal advisory group, really meets only when the assembly meets, or it can be convened when there's a big problem. And then, as you can see, the structure looks a lot better. There's 2 main committees in this proposed model, the Hydrographic Services and Standards Committee, and the Inter-Regional Cooperation Committee, where all your regional commissions fall under that, and also capacity building falls in this structure as well. It's a special committee for that. Hydrographic Service Standards Committee, that deals, it's the overarching body to deal with the technical aspects of cartography, hydrography. There's a couple of work groups on that as well. Now, the idea is that the council will be in between member states and the assembly. The council is not going to consist of 80 member states. It is only a group of 30 member states, and it meets every year. And what's very important of the composition of the council. It took us a lot of, I would almost say, horse trading to come up with a model that everybody was happy with in the council. I think when it initially started off, it was very, very Eurocentric. The big players were all in there. And we had a big fight. The regional commissions, it's playing such an enormous role in the functioning of the ISO nowadays, that there must be a regional representation in the council, and we managed to achieve that. So I can guarantee you, in the present council, when this proposed model becomes approved, there will always be an African member state in the council. And that is enshrined in this new convention. Well, as you heard, we made this decision or this proposal in 2005 to try and get all these other lots and lots of little working committees in order. It was accepted that we're going to wait quite some time to get the required votes to bring in the new convention. So it was accepted that this new structure at the bottom, which doesn't really affect the convention itself, just a way of doing our work, that was accepted. So that is currently in place. That is the hybrid model which is functioning at the moment. So we still have the International Hydrographic Conference meeting every 5 years. The Bureau is still there. And then you have the main committees which are currently functioning. Thank you. So, the implications of this. For the IHO, the approval of the protocol of amendments to the IHO is really an indispensable prerequisite for the modernization of the IHO. We cannot continue to work as they worked in days gone by because there's just no decisions. Decision making currently has to be done through circular letters. You need a certain amount of votes and returns from your circular letters to make any decisions. If you go to your main committees, the majority of all the main committees, you will very rarely find more than 30 member states present on those committees, those working committees. And invariably, South Africa is the only African state at any of these committee meetings. 31 more approvals are needed before this protocol of amendments can come into effect. You've seen the countries that have already approved it. So we still have a long way to go. For South Africa, the implications, our membership fees will remain exactly the same. A little bit more detail on the membership fees. It's based on shares. Your shares are calculated on the tonnage of the country. So any country with very few ships will have a much lower membership fee. We have 4 shares. And that 15,900 euros has been exactly the same since 2004. Now, the more countries that join the IHO, of course, will have the effect that membership fees will also become less. Further, I would think if we are now the third African country that can approve or ratify this convention, I'm quite sure it will increase our international standing as well, that we can make this very important organization to continue forward. And the lastly, and I think that's the most important thing, to continue to be a member, a decision maker in this organization, to allow South Africa to champion capacity building and to enhance hydrography in our region. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, sir. I will now proceed with my presentation, and I will explain the regulatory process that we followed up to this portfolio committee. If I can just allow the...
Can I just find out if there's any members got a question? Okay, please present your questions, and then I'll come to your presentation.
Chair, I thought I should say... I've got to our president and captain council to just explain to you what those things. See, they have identical insignia. If they could explain what that means, so that when we then meet with members of the South African Navy, having that, then you know what call and mastering there. Well.
Thank you very much. First of all, may I just say that the only two professional registered hydrographic surveyors in the South African government, therefore the South African Navy, is Captain Albert Comfer and myself. I've moved beyond this now, but I obviously have a serious interest, and the badges that I wear are reflective of that background. This badge is the indicative of the fact that both of us are hydrographic surveyors and served on board the SAS Protea, which is the Hydrographic Survey Ship of South Africa. That's our affiliation badge. But this badge here, because it's gold, it indicates that both of us have had command at sea, and in this case, the two badges go together, and it means that both of us have had command of the SAS Protea, which is the Hydrographic Survey Ship of the South African Navy.
That was not my question, but I understand it. And I appreciate it.
Okay, that's fine. So we have Ms. Zodlo, we have got Mamuhlengiwe. You also have a question there, Mlambo? Okay. And then it's yourself, Mainir. Okay, that's fine. So it will be Zodlo, Mlengiwe, and Mainir. Okay.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I think for me the starting point would be probably an explanation in one sentence what your role is in relation to what the role of the Department of Transport would be on matters relating to SOLAS and the carriage of goods by sea. Because then that would help me to ask questions from an informed perspective. Because the questions that I have really relate to it's that lack of understanding between the two and how they link and how they actually de-link as well. Maybe let's start with that. Then I'll then be able to look a little bit more intelligent in the way that I read my question. If I can just get a response to this, then I'll be able to ask that.
We certainly were prepared for that answer because we expected that the honourable members would be very clever to find that there is this anomaly. The anomaly here is that the International Maritime Organization Safety of Life at Sea Convention is signed by the Department of Transport, and the Department of Transport actually represents the South African government on the IMO. Historically, though, the Hydrographic Service has always been in South Africa's case, and in the case of about 60% of the states in the world, have been part of the navies, specifically those navies that operate submarines, primarily because the bathymetry, this is the depth information that we require in order to produce nautical charts, are essential for the type of work that we do and for driving of submarines under the water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, historically, when the Navy was born in 1922, the first vessel that it received as a gift from the UK was the HMS Crozier that became the first SAS Protea. And she has always been, we are now on our fourth one, and she's always been the hydrographic survey vessel for South Africa. Therefore, we work together with the Department of Transport in meeting on the one side the regulations of the International Maritime Organization, but on the other side our own responsibilities in terms of the International Hydrographic Convention, which, as was stated, and just for interest sake, South Africa sent the hydrographer in 1967 to Paris to, on behalf of government, to accede to the Hydrographic Convention, which was then later adopted and came into force, I think 3 years later. Navies generally need this information in order to do its work. The merchant navy needs this in order to ensure the safe navigation of merchant ships and trade, fisheries, etc. And therefore duplication is expensive, and therefore we have assumed this responsibility. It is a sub program within the South African Navy. It's covered within our business plan, and we conduct this on behalf of South Africa and on behalf of the government of South Africa. May I just perhaps also add that it is recognized that the Hydrographic Office of the South African Navy is the depository of all governmental copyrighted information, bathymetry, hydrographic information, and that is the only recognized information that may be used in the determination of maritime boundaries or maritime zones. And in South Africa's case, I think it was on the 9th of May this year, we lodged a claim for a continental shelf extension, which makes our sea area much greater for our children's children, and that was based on the hydrographic data that's lodged with the Hydrographic Office of the South African Navy. So the hydrographer of the South African Navy has both a naval hat in providing the Navy ships with the data required with which they proceed safely at sea, but also a national hat where he represents government in terms of the national obligations.
Thank you. Which then brings me to the question on the membership fees. And if you say the membership fees are determined by the number of ships, would that be merchant, naval, or your fishing ships? And for landlocked countries that would not have ships, but like you said, they have got Great Lakes, how then is that determined? You also say that South Africa will continue to champion capacity building to enhance hydrography in the region. The capacity that South Africa has and the incapacity in the rest of the continent except for Mozambique and Senegal, how much of a burden in terms of rand value, but also in terms of professional contribution, is it on the RSA? Then we go to the question on this diagram and how the regions are split as per the IHO. But would it also not make sense that as we look at the split from an African perspective, and as we look at capacity building, that we shouldn't do the split as African countries according to the regions that exist? There's COMESA, there's SADC, there's other regions. So that when we start planning as a continent on capacity building and professional enhancement, that we are sure what it is that needs to be done to ensure that the rest of the continent in some way or the other does comply. Because you've got two countries in SADC that almost meet the standard. Then you have Senegal. Then the rest of the continent is really left bare, which then means that the larger burden for ensuring that the African continent is on par with the rest of the world then really comes to South Africa, Mozambique to a certain degree, and Senegal to a certain extent. Of course, Nigeria as well. But the other countries except for South Africa do not meet the full requirement. And I'm just worried about the burden on South Africa and whether we should not look at having an African solution that is not necessarily along these lines. I'm not saying that we should do away with this, but that's so that we as Africans are able to solve our own problems with regards to what it is that we're about here, that we look at regionalizing along the ways that the continent is regionalized, and just to ensure that we build capacity along those lines. And by doing that, the net effect of that is that we'll be reducing the burden on South Africa. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the presenters. Actually, I was provoked by my chair by saying we should listen carefully because some of us will be expected to go and present this, not present as such, but to ensure that Parliament is amending. You know, guys, what you are saying to us today is new for me, who will be standing there presenting or persuading my Parliament to understand to a point where it has to. When I was saying 1951, most of us were not even born, but I arrived here in 2004. Surely I should have long heard about this hydrography. Where are the blockages? When do we report? When do we hear about this thing? Does one have to serve in this portfolio committee for one to be a member of parliament to be able to hear about this? I'm coming to a question. I'm just wanting to give the background to why I'm going to ask what I'm asking. I happen to have spent most of my years in KZN. And KZN is both what my honorable member has asked. It's both. It's full of big rivers, surrounded by so many seas or ocean, whatever. But it's not one. The Richards Bay has got its own. Deben has got its own, Zanzibar. But such topics, when you look at schools, high schools, universities, I've graduated, I've never heard about this. when it was started in 1951, and we have been member country since 1951. It raises a number of questions in my head when I see myself really persuading my honourable members to amend this. First, I would want to know what is hydrography. I've heard, because I was having this opportunity of listening from you, but a person who is not in this committee, what is hydrography? Two, what have we achieved all these years by us being member country? But if you can just give me two cases that one can stand firm in the platform there when one is persuading the members, just two brilliant cases that we have achieved, and what caused that? One case where we lost to achieve, or what we are failing to achieve, and what are the hindrances? The third question is, as a member of parliament, as we are members of parliament, I'm going to talk about the state of the nation only of this year. When we said we want to provide dignified jobs, decent jobs, capacity building, remember I started in Rivers, those who are inner land. Is this thing only applicable to the oceans only, or we want to build capacity influenced by what is available to ensure that a person, as he develops, and can really be in the list of these to qualify? Just to know, you feel, hey, no man, I can make it. If I'm like this in the river, I can make it. What capacity are we going to be really looking at based on the state of the nation? The skills, the jobs, not just the jobs, but jobs. As you are dignified sitting there, you know, it's so warm to hear that the South Africa, that two South Africans, but transmission, consistency, how are we going to ensure that this thing becomes an inheritance? You know, 1951. The last thing which you cannot answer, if it might sound like a joke, but for me who is hearing this thing for the first time, I'm asking now, what is the relationship between, all of a sudden you hear aeroplanes falling, and they don't fall on the desert, all of a sudden now they fall on the ocean, in the oceans, and they look and found, you know, what is your role there, and when do you get involved in the hydrography and the passengers who got lost in oceans and seas, what is your role? And all of a sudden, it's increasing and it's beginning to be very painful. I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got three questions, but I think the two are of a general nature, and I'll hold them.
Apologies. I have three questions, but I think two of the questions are of a general nature, and I'll hold them back until the presentation is complete. But just a question which speaks directly to Captain Comfer's presentation. You spoke at some length and in some detail about the about representation on the council, and you also spoke in some detail about the revenue side of the equation. Could you talk to representation and how it is decisions are made in respect of the finance committee and on the expenditure side of the equation? How does this organization decide how to spend money?
The one question you would also be interested is the suspension. I saw you saying suspended members. When do you get suspended as a member? What is the problem that you create for yourself? And just to follow up, to what both my colleagues are concerned about, the internal training within the SANDF to assist with capacity so that legacy doesn't get lost when you three gentlemen are not there. How do we work around that one? What is the SANDF doing in relation to that in the present scenario? That will be the last one.
Thank you, Richard. I also wish to thank you very much for the presentation. But what I would like to know is that whether the organization, the scientific organization, is able to recruit women and youth into it. Because I think, more particularly, in the new era of dispensation in South Africa, the Constitution requires the gender basis. Mm. Thank you very much.
Can I just clarify? My question was not about training, as in when I spoke about capacity. I was talking about capacity in a generic form. That would be human resources capacity, it would be financial, it would be all sorts of things. I was not talking about training. Okay.
Don't be protective of yourself here. I was just riding on your back, I had, as usual.
If I perhaps can just start off by saying, what is, the question was asked, what is this thing called hydrography? Now, there are many technical definitions, etc., but if I can put it into practical terms for myself, it is really that business that we do in order to be able to survey the seas and the coastal areas so that we gather all the information necessary with which we can produce the, and I'm going to use the land word, maps of the sea, in order for people to be able to navigate safely from one place to another at sea. Therefore, any ship that enters Cape Town's port would have been making use of a chart of the South African Navy. With it goes, and in one of the obligations it says that there are a number of services and publications. With a map. Now, one of the achievements of the Hydrographic Office is that we have full coverage of maps. In our language, we would use charts, and there's a technical reason, but for the moment, maps are fine. We produce full coverage of maps all the way from the north of Namibia at the Kunene River, all the way around our coast to the border between South Africa and Mozambique at Punta de Oro. These maps are produced at various scales for the purpose for which they are needed. Therefore, for entry into harbor, you need much more detail if you want to do it safely. You will see that there's a change to our landscape in Cape Town this morning. It was carried on the newspaper last night, where a vessel actually went aground on the beach at Blobath. Now, that vessel went aground not because of a lack of charts or information, but because of a technical problem on board the vessel. In South Africa, we can categorically state that we have good coverage of our coastal area all around the coast, which produces these charts. Now, that gives South Africa the ability to do the exploration, exploitation of the sea, not only as a methodology with which we send ships safely and transport goods, but also for sea fisheries. For all the research that's being done, the basis of the research are these charts, are these maps that we produce. The exploitation in terms of any of the diamonds that are recovered off the west coast of South Africa, the oil, the gas, all of that is based on the hydrographic surveys that have been carried out by the South African Navy since its inception. Therefore, not only do we have a use for the South African Navy as a combat capability, but we have use, it is a national asset that we have in terms of producing these products and services for the benefit of the public of South Africa. May I just add one thing? Madagascar does not have this service. The ships that have to trade in Madagascar pay about 500% more in their insurance premiums than the ships that have to enter Cape Town, which means that that 500% increase in the premium, because the risk is greater, is obviously transferred onto the price of the goods that have to be imported or exported into Madagascar. So it has that benefit as well. Having said sort of of, in a very short sentence, long sentence perhaps, what hydrography is all about. I need to go to the question of payment. The payment of our membership of the International Hydrographic Organization is carried in the Maritime Defense Program of the Department of Defense in his budget as this 15,000 euros, and it's based on two things. It's based on the national tonnage registered. Now, what does that mean? Unfortunately, in South Africa, we have very few ships. I'm talking about merchant ships that are actually flying the South African flag. There are many reasons for that, and it's not my position to state anything about that. But we have very few ships flying the South African flag that are registered in South Africa. Now, that tonnage, added to the tonnage of the South African Navy, tonnage in terms of ships, six over seven of the tonnage, we pay membership based on the tonnage, and we get shares on the ground of that. It is, as I said, 15,000 euros. If South Africa creates a much bigger tonnage register, it will obviously, the premium will go up, but so will our shares. And you vote according to your voting rights are in accordance with the amount of shares that you have. I would like to ask Captain Aubrey Comfort, because he is the man who won the Dalrymple Award for Regional Capacity Building in Africa from the United Kingdom. So he's really the champion of regional capacity building, to speak about the burden and the expertise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The burden is really the time and effort you put in yourself. Financial burden, obviously, is my salary, which I've been paid already. The technical visits which I conducted were paid for by the IHO Capacity Building Fund, so it was at no cost to the state. That is what the fund are being used for. Running the Capacity Building Register means that you have to be in continuous contact with our states in the region to try and gauge the requirements. As I've visited them all, I know what they need and what levels they are, and you build up very good contacts. Our regional commission, unfortunately, only meets biannually every second year, and there you can reinforce, because each state, associate member or member state, must deliver then a national report where they also must bring their own inputs with regards to capacity building. So financially, the burden is not big. It's really our technical expertise. We have assisted Mozambique, for instance. We've assisted them to print charts for them in our office. That is capacity building, because they didn't have the ability to do that. We did that for them. We have trained many of the members in our region. We've had members from Angola, Angolan Navy, at our hydrographic school. We've had members from Malawi. We've had members from Tanzania. Mozambique, etc. So that is our role that we play in capacity building. And I would think also that in most of these working committees, as the only representative of the region and most of the time Africa, that's also part of our capacity building role, to represent them, to fight for our countries in this region and for Africa.
I wanted to make a slight addition that they basically do road maps, so to speak, if I use the road maps. So if you want to move from Cape Town to Simonstown and you are a stranger to this area, you need a map to be able to drive from Cape Town to Simonstown or from whatever point A to point B. So that's what this office does with respect to the sea, so that you don't hit a rock or you know, other obstacles that may be there, or shipwreck for that matter. But one of the things I would want them to just expand on, although it's not part of the presentation, but it's a very important element, is it was mentioned in passing, the whole issue of the continental shelf claim. That is a very important critical matter.
which is on the agenda of the United Nations General Assembly as we speak. And it is a matter, as they mentioned in passing, which is going to result in, if we win, in South Africa expanding its I nearly said landscape, but it's actually not landscape, expand its borders. Because if we win it, it will mean that we have almost twice the size that South Africa as a country is at the moment, right, 1.2 million square meters. But if we then go on to that one, which will be now out at sea, it will double that, which would have an impact or an implication on mineral resources that the country may be able to get across the board, whether it's oil explorations, diamonds, and all of that. But if they could just expand on that for the comments.
Go ahead. Honourable Chair, thank you very much. If I could just add on to what the Secretary for Defence has said. In terms of the United Nations Convention on Law of the Sea, 1982, which came into force in 1994, South Africa and South Africa's Parliament on the 14th of November 1994 passed an Act of Parliament, and it's called the Maritime Zones Act of South Africa. The Maritime Zones Act of South Africa makes provision in terms of international convention to claim a part of the sea surrounding its country as its own. As you go further away from the coastline, so your responsibilities and rights diminish. What does it mean? Within the first 12 nautical miles, and 12 nautical miles equates to, let's say, 24 kilometers from the coastline, that sea belongs to South Africa. It has full rights over that sea. All laws in South Africa are totally applicable in that zone. The only thing that we cannot prevent is the use of that sea for what is called innocent passage, which means that a foreign ship may pass through those waters on its peaceful way to somewhere else. But all our laws, immigration, everything. The next 24 kilometers from there is called the contiguous zone, and only four types of laws are applicable there: fiscal, customs, sanitary laws, and immigration laws. May I add that in South Africa's case, we've added a fifth right or responsibility, and that is to protect the culture, the maritime culture of South Africa, and therefore the maritime cultural zone extends to 24 nautical miles from the coast, 48 kilometers. If you go up to 200 nautical miles from the coast, we as South Africa have full control over what is known as the non-renewable and renewable resources. What does that mean? The renewable resources is seen as fish stocks. They, if we manage them properly, they will be there for our children's children. But we have the responsibility to exploit it, but to manage it responsibly. But we also have the right and responsibility for the non-renewable resources. That is probably the things that are lying on the sea bottom, which could be diamonds in the case of the West Coast, could be the gas or the oil below the surface. Off KwaZulu-Natal, ma'am, I can assure you there's a lot of manganese nodules, which for our children in time to come, 50 years from now, will become very important. They're lying in 2,000 meters of waters. They are ours. We have assured that for the future of our country. But now what has happened is that you can claim, based on certain scientific information, you can claim an extension of that zone, and it's called the continental shelf claim, which goes beyond the 200 nautical mile or 400 kilometers. It goes to up to a maximum of 350 nautical miles, therefore 700 kilometers from the coast. And in that area, we have the responsibility to manage and to exploit the non-renewable resources. Therefore, if there is oil, diamonds, they belong to us. And due to this claim that we've been able to put in on the 9th of May at the United Nations Commission on this, we have lodged our claim in time in order for it to be ratified, we believe, by 2011, in order for that to be become part of South Africa and for the future of our country. Could I just ask the Secretary for Defense whether are you happy with that, sir? I would like to carry on with that one question that you asked about the region, and specifically you asked about the areas. I would like to assure you that the DOD, and specifically in this instance the SA Navy, participates in something which is known as the Standing Maritime Committee of the ISDSC of SADC. And one of the standing items within the Standing Maritime Committee is hydrographic surveying and marine cartography, and therefore capacity building within the SADC region. It's a standing item. There are four cooperation plans in SADC with respect to the Standing Maritime Committee, and one of the four cooperation plans is the Hydrography and Marine Cartography Cooperation Plan, and the owner of that plan is Captain Aubrey Comfer, who manages that on behalf of SADC. So we recognize very clearly the SADC, but we also recognize that hydrography doesn't stop when you get to the end of a country. Your ships go to Europe. And therefore, the South African Navy was instrumental in creating what is known as the Sea Power for Africa Symposium. Earlier this year, the third one was held in Cape Town here at the International Convention Center, and one of the sessions was allocated to capacity building within the region. Because capacity building, it's not doing the surveys or the cartography for somebody else. It is capacitating that person to do it himself or herself. And that's exactly what we are doing. We are through his membership of the regional commissions, but also of the IHO, we are managing to get international assistance. For example, one of the reasons why Norway is part of the Regional Hydrographic Commission is because of the monetary aid that Norway is providing to Mozambique in establishing hydrographic survey capability, but with our guidance and assistance. So we see beyond. But the regions that you see on the map, they all have a history behind it. History in terms of, for example, and somebody asked the question about aircraft falling out of the air, of course. Many of these regions were determined on the grounds of shipping lanes, but also aircraft routes. Because if an aircraft falls into the water, yes, if we're on the scene and we can go and assist in a normal search and rescue mode, absolutely. But when the Helderberg, which was an SAA plane, fell just to the north of Mauritius some years ago, the South African Navy provided the capability, the hydrophones, to actually find the black box on the bottom. And we now, when the Air France aircraft that disappeared over the Atlantic from Brazil to France, we were on the point of offering our services in terms of assisting in finding the black box, but the time ran out in terms of the black box only has so much time. So yes, in terms of that, we also participate. You asked the question about why do you only hear about it now? Ma'am, we sometimes ask the same question. May I say that we have really tried in terms of perhaps not good enough, and perhaps it should become part of curriculum, I don't know. But we came up with a marketing campaign where we produced these big posters, and the posters were supposed to go into all schools, telling all schools about what hydrography is all about and what are the benefits for South Africa in terms of you know, not just diamonds and oil, but marine traffic, etc. Perhaps it's time that we do this again. But may I say that in terms of hydrographic survey, as I stated, it is one of the sub-programs of the Maritime Defense Program. It's therefore covered in the business planning process of the South African Navy and the DOD. It's covered within the DOD's business plan. And in our quarterly and annual reports, we do make reports on progress made in terms of this. But I think the lesson I'm learning is that we need to do a lot more work in terms of trying to send the message to South Africans. We are obviously very proud of our achievements, and if other people want to listen to us, we will tell them about it. We do celebrate on an annual basis. We do celebrate the International Hydrographic Day. I think it's the 21st of June. The year before last, we celebrated it in Durban, and we invited all the schools in the Durban area to the SS Protea. We did a number of briefings to the schools in Durban area in terms of making them aware. We took them on tours of the ship, etc. This year, we celebrated Hydrographic Day in Port Elizabeth, and we took it to the people of Port Elizabeth. And our intention is slowly but surely to take it right around the country. In terms of making people more aware of hydrography. You asked the question as to what have we achieved? First of all, I think I must repeat that South Africa is one of the few countries on the African continent that is able to produce a full suite of charts which covers the sea area from the Kunini River all the way around to Punta de Oro. It has never found to be legally negligent. You must understand that if we, in terms of one of the regulations here, if we do not produce the information, and I remember an occasion where Lloyd's of London, which is an insurance company, wanted to take us to court because one of its ships hit a rock off Cape Agulhas. And we said, no, but, and they said, this rock does not appear on your chart. Therefore, you are legally liable and you're legally negligent. Of course, we were very worried. This is a lot more than a pension. So we decided we were going to go back to this area and relook. And we resurveyed the area. And we couldn't find this rock on which this ship apparently ran aground. And eventually we decided to go into an area which is depicted on the chart as a dangerous area. Therefore, ships do not go there. And we found a rock with scrape marks. And not too far away from this rock with the scrape marks on top of it, we found a plate that fell off the bottom of the ship. And we could take photographs, we could recover the plate, and we sent it to Lloyd's of London, and obviously we were found not to be negligent. So we are not negligent, and I think that is part of it. We have, therefore, I believe, assured over the years, virtually the safe navigation of all the vessels around the coast of South Africa. May I also add that the United Nations evaluates countries in terms of their capacity and their capability, and may I say that South African Hydrographic Office and the Hydrographic Survey Arm has been found to fall in the Class 1 category. I think there are only 13 countries, if I'm not mistaken, 13 countries in the world that meet the standards of the Class 1 classification. And we are very proud of that fact that we managed to do so. I think you refer to us, we are old. And we will disappear, and hopefully our legacy will not just be old charts, etc. Our legacy will be a number of youngsters that are below us, a number of youngsters that we take in every year, a number of youngsters that are trained nationally and internationally, whether it's in India. I think we have somebody in India at the moment, youngster training in India. We have, we normally make use, both Aubrey and myself, we were trained in England. Because of the categorization of that training, it's not yet viable in South Africa to do so. But we have a legacy of youngsters coming through our systems. And may I just say that one of the problems we are facing is, once again, scarce skills, and I would like to claim that hydrographic surveyors and cartographers are in the scarce skills category, because if you go through Africa, you go to Angola, you go to Nigeria, wherever, you will find that many ex-hydrographic surveyors from the South African Navy are now working for oil companies, assisting governments to the north of us in exploiting some of the natural resources in those countries. So we continue to do so. We have youngsters, cartographers studying at the Kaput, at the Cape Town University of Technology. We constantly, on every year, we take in youngsters into the system in order to ensure a new generation of young people that in time to come will be able to take over from Captain Comfort, etc. But it is a very specialized, it's a very small, the hydrographic office structure consists only of 27 posts. It's a very small structure, but it's ongoing. The honorable member, who I think used to be a submariner, and one needs to, and I'm speaking with great respect as to his use of hydrographic products, and he can probably attest to that. He asked about the expenditure. I'm going to leave it to Captain Comfort because he's more up to date, but basically that's why we sit on the finance committee of the IHO. Where all the revenue, there's a budget that's approved for the five-year period by the assembly, and that is managed by the International Hydrographic Bureau through the finance committee, and the finance committee does its work primarily by meeting once every 4 or 5 years, but primarily by means of circular letters. But Aubrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow on that, it's the IHO, the conference, make the decision on the expenditure. The finances of the organization is from member states, and it comes out of this membership fees that's paid. So the countries with enormous merchant fleets, they really finance the IHO. Our contribution is really a drop in the ocean. There's a five-year work plan, so it's linked to the budget. So it has moved on since 1921. There's some modern managerial practices that do take place. And if anything changes to the work plan, that means expenditure of funds, it must be approved by all member states. And that can only be done through circular letters or by convening an extraordinary conference. So it's very tight controls. The finance committee, where this budget is approved, as April mentioned, only meet once in 5 years, really, at the conference where the finances get approved. Mr. Chairman, you also questioned the suspension. Unfortunately, suspension happens when you don't pay your membership fees. But they're very lenient. They normally allow quite a couple of years, and then after that they get suspended. But they're always welcome to come back. They're not totally kicked out. If they pay up the membership fees, they do get reinstated. Ma'am, you mentioned the rescue role. Admiral Teutoburg mentioned hydrophones. The hydrographic equipment that we use for surveying are also very well suited to be used for rescue operations, to find sunken vessels. I think in 2005, 2006, a bulk carrier ran over a small fishing boat just south of Port Elizabeth in the Cape St. Francis area. The SAS Protea were about 2-3 days after this tragedy. Was on her way to a survey area that we're currently working on, the KwaZulu-Natal coast. That's our priority at the moment. And she managed to, with her multi-beam system, when we got the position, I signaled it to the ship, and with the multi-beam system, she managed to find that little fishing vessel in a depth of 90 meters of water, probably within an hour. So at least we managed, there again, is the the other additional roles that we can fulfill. So there's multi-beam systems, side scan systems, where you get a beautiful picture of the ocean. There's magnetometers that you can employ to find sunken wrecks, submarines, and things like that. So we do have an additional role that we can also play, not just hydrographic services. I think there was, do we recruit women and youth? I think Admiral Toilerberg did mention that in past, but currently on the SAS Protea, I have in the officers corps, there is two women surveyors. The one lady is going to study at the end of the year in the UK for survey course. In the survey recorder branch, which is the ratings, there we also have a split of women and men. So we're very well represented. But as Admiral mentioned, we're a very small branch. The hydrographic office plus the survey the surveyors and the surveyors, the survey recorders on the SAS Protea, all in total, we the post available to us in the Navy is probably about 60, if I'm correct. So it's a very small branch with quite a lot of responsibility, and we're very proud of that. Thank you. I think we covered most of them, but if there's anything we didn't answer, please ask again.
I'll give.
How long do I go on?
Sir, I can be 10 minutes, sir.
No, thank you, Chairperson. And I was a bit confused, like my colleague here, because what has been presented, it was like Greek to me. but I'm still worried that though we are talking about the post, the compact kind of, I don't know what to call it, a division or a unit within the Navy. But my question is, how long or for how many years does one have to qualify to be a hydrographer? Because I'm looking at you two gentlemen as specialists in this field. But the organization was formed in 1951. Well, you understand that other people like migrating. It's nice for them. It's fine. But I'm proud that you are still here holding on. If I can be answered on that one. Thank you.
I wish to state that up front that all of us are first and foremost naval officers with a specialization. So we follow the normal path that a combat officer in the South African Navy will follow in terms of the time taken. In terms of time taken, I've been in the Navy now for 36 years, and of those 36 years, I spent the first probably 18 years of my life within the hydrographic survey branch. Various qualifications. It's not a question that you can go from a trick and go and study a hydrographic surveying for 6 years, and now suddenly you are there. It's really a learnership, whereby you do a certain level of hydrographic surveying, which is then you go and you do practical hydrographic surveying, and then you go to the next course. So I became a charge surveyor, which is the highest level of surveyor, hydrographic surveying, after 12 years in the Navy. So I would say that probably a person that's more clever than I, probably about 10 years, but that's about what it takes for a very highly qualified hydrographic surveyor. But there are various levels. We also have marine cartographers. Marine cartographers are primarily trained here at the University of Technology in Cape Town, and that's a normal technical qualification, which is also with its practicals added to it, but I think we could probably qualify a marine cartographer to the lowest levels within 3-4 years.
Yes, it's a technical diploma, which is 2 years of theory at the University of Technology, and then 1 year practical, which normally gets done at our office. So 3 years you have a qualified cartographer and I get a diploma. To turn this person into a marine cartographer that can do marine cartography, paper charts, Nowadays, we also have the electronic navigational charts, which is a total different set of software and all that. It takes you to become an expert in that and usable at least another 2 to 3 years. So I would say to train a cartographer from start till he's usable, about 6 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will now just explain the due process that the Department of Defense has followed to up till where we are today in terms of our constitutional imperatives. We have, in the Department of Defense, obtained a plenary defense staff council mandate to approach cabinet to approve the submission to both houses in parliament. Now, that has been done on 20 November 2006. We followed the intra-departmental consultations in terms of the departmental prescript, where we have to consult with all the services and divisions within the department. That was in November 2006. And then inter-departmental consultations. That was with the Department of Transport, SAMHSA, South African Maritime Safety Authority, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Department of Foreign Affairs. Now, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, as well as Foreign Affairs, the Chief State Law Advisors, that was a prescriptive or it's something that we had to do to get their opinions in terms of the implications of the amendments or the proposed amendments. And then on our way to Cabinet, we passed it through the RPS cluster, both levels, and that was done in February 2007. And then the cabinet decision made 2007 to table it in parliament. That took place on the 18th of August this year, both to both the National Assembly as well as in the Council of Provinces, through our intra-departmental processes. Whenever we obtain an approval by parliament, we have to inform the IHO. The secretariat by means of a suitable instrument through the Department of International Cooperation as prescribed. Now, very briefly, sir, the constitutional or the regulatory process in terms of the Constitution is that in terms of Section 2312, all international agreements similar to the IHO Convention binds the South African or the government or the Republic of South Africa as a member state only after it has been approved by a resolution in both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, unless it's a technical administrative executive agreement, which is in terms of 2313, not necessary. Now, the amendment to the convention also falls within the ambit of Section 2312, and that is why we have tabled in Parliament for approval. And I just want to make it clear, it's not ratification or accession, it's for approval. Then, sir, it brings me to Annexure B of the explanatory memorandum that was distributed in terms of the rules of Parliament to all members that deals with the implications of all the amendments to the preamble as well as the 19 articles of the Convention. And, sir, I'm at your mercy here to whether I should discuss them in detail. All the technicalities of the amendments, or should I now just use the summary which we have provided in the explanatory memorandum in terms of the most important implications for the government in terms of the technicalities, the financial implications, constitutional implications, as well as the security and strategic importance of thereof.
Can I tell you about
this? Yes, sir. Now, Annexure, the explanatory memorandum that was required contains two protocols two annexures. The first one is the new protocol, the new convention of the IHO, and Annexure B I have analyzed and explained all the implications of all the articles as well as the preamble. That would have any implication on the for South Africa, sir.
Member, can I say that
you do have the capacity of going this through, or you are then going to come back next week and have a discussion on the issues themselves. So it does give you an opportunity to reflect on the explanatory notes. But next week, amongst ourselves, we will be having the final discussion before we take it up with Parliament. We do have a capacity to go it through. I think if it is this one, we will be able to read it and get into it.
Thank you, sir. If I may just conclude then, sir, with your permission, sir, the implications, if I can just summarize them, obviously the financial implications that was explained very, very briefly, very clearly by the two noble representatives. We have the amendments do not propose any change to the formula to determine our national responsibilities in terms of finance are exactly still the same. The constitutional implications, as we said, in terms of Section 2314, we have to come to Parliament for approval. What is very important here is that it does not the protocol of amendments does not contain any self-executing provisions in terms of the Constitution. Now, what does that mean? It means that if approved by Parliament, sir, it will not become law in South Africa necessarily because of the nature of the protocol. Some international conventions do have the implication that it becomes law in South Africa when ceded to or ratified by Parliament. Are you comfortable with that, Honourable Member?
No, what is going to happen now is that you are going to give us an opportunity to go it through.
Yes.
Then next week on Tuesday, you will then have to come back and members would have gone into the nitty-gritties and would be then having a discussion and will give you then an opportunity to listen to us and our concerns, and then you could guide us through that particular process. That is like a normal process in Parliament where we have a discussion amongst ourselves. I was made aware by the committee session that we need to invite the Department of Science to come and join us so that we could have them also as part of our discussion before we finalize, so that we don't, because it does have some hiccup on scientific issues. So we will finalize it by next week. Of now, we should be appreciating that you have brought us on board. But next week, we'll be going to the nitty-gritties, giving members an opportunity to also read what is in front of us. Another gentleman from APLA might not be fairly aware. This is not about nocturis, my brother. This scientific work that you're supposed to do. So I'm really cautious. You must read this document. There is no nocturis and other kinds. Dealing with very serious matters of science. Good morning, sir. Well, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks a lot, man. Yeah. I would like us to take it as far as that, and then next week we all assemble again and have a discussion to finalize the.
Thank you very much, sir.
Is that okay with you?
Yes, sir. I understand.
Fine. Is that okay with the department? Yeah, fine. Okay. You want to say something?
I just want to complete my question, please. I just want to finish my question.
I've managed to develop a third in the meantime. But I think we can deal with these fairly quickly, Chair.
You're not a minister. You're not a minister.
Just on the question of, once again, finance, you'd, after reading your explanatory memorandum, you do anticipate additional expenditure, but you argue that it will not negatively impact on the budget. Can I therefore assume that you can absorb the additional expenditure within your existing budget? That's the first question. The second question, I just want to be clear, from a professional point of view, my assumption is that you're recommending that we accept these protocols. There's nothing in your professional opinion that should cause us to amend or object. That's the second question. The third question is a more general question. I mean, you've mentioned that we are required to maintain a very high hydrographic standard, which we do given our Class 1 classification, which is a compliment to you. But do you have the resources to continue to do your good work, or do you have sufficient resources to continue to do your good work over the next three financial years.
Yes, the cost, the additional cost in terms of the hydrographer, whoever he or she may be, to go to Monaco to participate in what we deem is the council, we can absorb that. I would like to state in this regard that we are particularly aware of the fact that we are probably one of the only instances in the DoD that brings in an income. The bathymetry that we collect are shared internationally, and every time it appears on another chart, therefore, for example, if it appears on the United Kingdom chart, they pay us a royalty fee. That royalty fee goes into the National Revenue Fund. At the moment, that it's not much. It's about £80,000 per year from the UK. There are other instances where it's about $40,000. And we will probably start applying to have that money recovered from the National Revenue Fund to be allocated in order to cover some of the costs associated with hydrographic surveying. Do we recommend? We certainly recommend that South Africa adopts this. I think our international standing up till now has made us one of the leaders, and I think that this will contribute greatly to not only South Africa, but specifically to the region and the efficiency and effectiveness of the IHO as an organization. What was the last? Do we have the resources? I'm going to be very careful here because the Secretary for Defense is sitting here. I would go so far as to say that the South African Navy, in the same manner as the Department of Defense and the SANDF as a whole, is managing to do its work within the budget, but certainly it would appreciate if this committee recommends more money to be voted for. May I just indicate in this regard that the South African Navy has budgeted for the expense of the hydrographic office in the MTF. Very clearly, it's, as I said, a sub-sub program. But not only that, we're presently on the strategic capital acquisition master plan of the Department of Defense. We have also allocated money for the replacement of the SAS Protea the fourth with an SAS Protea probably the fifth. It's called Project Hotel, if I may just say that the future planning in terms of capital acquisition of not just a ship but equipment is catered for within the existing strategic capital acquisition master plan of the Department of Defense. So yes.
Members, as you see, next week you must please go through the documents, and then next week we'll take a discussion amongst ourselves, which is like taking the final touch-up and to be clear what we are recommending for Parliament so that we should be informed. Again on Tuesday next week, if there is a program that is in front of you, you should be aware that there's what we call the peacekeeping missions, the Department of Life. Because of the peacekeeping work that we do within the department, within the country and within the continent, they had launched a particular campaign, or a month of peacekeeping missions. There is a program in front of you, Ian. Do you have it there? Okay, yeah, please. I need to guide you all the time because I want you to participate in this discussion. So next week, we are asking the department to come and brief us on Tuesday about this particular peacekeeping mission so that you can get informed how much work has happened and how things are going. And then part of our own contribution is, as Parliament, how do we view that particular peacekeeping mission and that work that has been done there. So we'll be having a briefing on Tuesday. And where is Monuk now? Yeah. On Wednesday, we had invited the people that we work with within the international arena
Monuk to come and talk to us about some of the work that is happening and post peacekeeping missions when countries are being left on their own, what happens. So we'd be having that type of a briefing Tuesday and Wednesday. The SecDef won't be able to make it, but is asking General Matanzima to come and give us that type of briefing because of where he is situated in the joint ops. He was responsible for those type of missions. So he'll be around and give us that type of information. Monuc would come on their own because they are working within the African continent, and they will give us more insight of how things are happening within that. That's how our program is going to be next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. So I'm making you aware so that you could be able to be fairly getting yourself informed so that you could deal with this matter when we interact next week. We finalize what you are raising, and then after that we deal with peacekeeping missions and some of those not questions of mainly of what happens and how are we combat ready about peacekeeping. We'll deal with that. Can I have you, and then I'll come to the members.
Thank you, Mr. I just want to... Sorry for that.
Mr. Secretary, as well, the recommendation that we're making, Mr. Chair, is that obviously, as Admiral said, we very strongly recommend that it should be approved. But what you want is without reservations. So, all the amendments, including the preamble and the 19th, so the emphasis here is without reservations. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
You don't talk like that in Parliament. We make the decision. You put it in front of us and we decide. When is there without reservation, it's like in the army. We run ourselves here, the institution. Leave it to us, we will see. The chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee has to leave. She has had something to do. Thank you for coming, chairperson. And have a good day and a long weekend. Okay. You want to say something, sir?
Chairperson, just a question of clarification, and perhaps the Secretary of Defense could assist us. The combat readiness briefings have now been postponed indefinitely. I mean, is there any light at the end of the tunnel? And when do we anticipate that these briefings will be presented to Parliament? They are absolutely imperative, I believe, that we receive those briefings as soon as possible.
No, without really bothering the SecDef, we are interacting with them to find the suitable things for us to be able to go through. So don't lose patience with me. He's not going to answer. It's me who's like putting everything that we keep on discussing with them. They will be having an opportunity before we rise that we'll be having that particular opportunity to deal with it. But we are in contact with the department overall. At the end of the day, it's the minister that has to give the approval. Because if you remember that, we've been saying that we're also giving the minister some chance to familiarize herself with some of the issues that are taking place. So we will be, it will be coming back into Parliament at the right time. Okay.
Do you understand that the minister is not giving her approval?
No, the minister will be giving her approval. No, it's just that he is... Also, you know, this strike thing has really upset some of the things that she wanted to go through and and be ready to come and do presentation to Parliament, you see. We are engaged with them, you see. It's not that they are ignoring that. They have taken it as serious as we have taken it serious. I mean, if you listen to the minister yesterday, she was quite frank about issues of discipline, and she showed a sense of that she does understand what is going on now in the department. For me, that was good progress, because I was not just listening to what was about the protest, but I was listening broadly that how much is he grappling now with the issues that are related to the department. I was quite impressed that the minister seems to know what is now beginning to happen within the department. And for us to come and engage her, I think she will be quite ready at any time. She has proven us correct yesterday that she does understand what's going on. But I'll finalize it with Mandy and the SecDef on which things you should come across. You had certain concerns about the joint operation in Rwanda.
The operation is called Operation Golfino.
we wanted to know, are you inviting us? And the symposium, why, where are you in relation to that? You want to go, Bana? You're fine.
Through you, with respect to exercise golfing, as far as I know, there were invitations extended to Parliament, but we'll just check the process between the department and the whole line to Parliament, because there is an open day, because not everybody goes, not even in the department. There is a specific open day, I think it's 22nd to 24th. In fact, you'll get more detail about it when the joint operations, the peace support operations briefing take place next week. Should give you more detail on that. Which one? The peace
support.
That is underway, actually.
Since if you don't have money to invite us. Okay, we'll leave it for you to sort it out.
We'll sort it out.
Yeah, okay. So, Yanda, Honorable, you've got something?
Chairperson, I'm looking at the program here.
Okay.
And it says outstanding matters, introduction meeting with military unions. I don't know what this actually means. When we as a committee have actually not discussed the issue of these unions and the possible threat to national security that these unions pose. So I think even before we start meeting with unions, let's have an in-house discussion on the implications of the unionization of the security cluster in general, but in particular the military. Thanks.
Look, we have to take a step ahead now. So in relation to all the issues that we call outstanding matters, if you look at that, because we've been calling for the update policy arrangement, which have not yet arrived. So it then means that we can't continue inviting them and talk to them and seems not to understand. As I said, that with policy arrangement, it has never been in Parliament, how do we act and how do we relate to that particular one. So I'm like agreeing with you that we must put a day aside where amongst ourselves as parliamentarians, we have an open discussion that how do we respond to this particular situation? Do we agree or do we have problems with unionization within the defense itself? If there are people that we think that we should invite, I would still say members of the committee, make those people available so that we can have a very fruitful discussion amongst ourselves. It will be an open discussion amongst ourselves, across parties, about this particular thing. That's how we would have to structure it, so that you can be able to guide each other on how we're responding to the situation itself that is confronting us. You want to say something?
Thank you, Chairperson. The members of the Defence Force who are here are not listening to me.
No, they are not.
No, they're not. Including the sectors. But you know, we in the past the ANC has been lambasted, specifically by the DA, Honourable Member, on the ANC's views on certain court judgments. And that was not an indication of the ANC's disdain or disrespect for the judiciary. It was really along the issues of what is enshrined in the Constitution and the selective implementation of the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights has also got a clause that relates to limitations. This is not a DA bashing exercise, because I know on this particular one, it's not. I don't go to that extent. I think at some point we need to take off our party hats and look at the interests of the Republic and its inhabitants.
as we approach this issue, because I have very strong reservations, and I think my party, MKNVA, and I can say, Honorable Mphahlele, your military veterans agree with me.
Which one?
all factions on my head agree with me that, this is seriously a problem. And the problem emanates from a constitutional court judgment. And we really need to be frank to ourselves, frank to our people that we represent here in Parliament, in the way that we approach these matters. That also the judiciary must understand that issues of national security will be debated by this Parliament. And if we have a problem, it is not a problem with the judiciary, but some of these judgments really create problems for national security. So I would advise that because we've got a person that deals with legal issues, that we leave it to the researchers, including him, to look at a way at which we can deal with this thing without undermining other processes that have taken effect. Because if soldiers expose the vulnerability of the Union building, it's a serious problem. But also if the security of other members of the Defence Force, I come from a party where we've had a mutiny. And for me this looked like a mutiny, and people were killed in a mutiny. And in the discussions that we've had over the weekend, Mr. Sekdev, the things that came out there are very scary. And this is why, Chairperson, I say maybe you could lead the cluster on this matter, because the things that came out of that meeting were to the effect that the police are also unionized. When they go on strike, they will see who we are, because we are trained to kill. And that statement does not only come from the soldiers, it also comes from the Johannesburg Metro Police Department, who have also said, well, this is what the police did in the M2 highway. We will do the same to them when they go on strike. And you can imagine what that does. So I'm just requesting fellow members that we look at this thing with utmost humility.
No, I really appreciate what you are saying. On Wednesday, we were supposed to be doing, at 9 o'clock, we were supposed to be doing a preliminary briefing on the structuring of the department. That is not going to take place. We will prioritize that discussion on Wednesday so that you could be able to give some direction towards, even in relation to that legality of the Constitutional Court. Because we are the lawmakers. We need to be able to look into that. How do we approach it? So we'll ask Mr. Vanara, I'm coming to you. We'll ask Mr. Vanara to take a legal mind and give us guidance on next week Wednesday, that how is he looking into that particular matter, so that we don't, as Honorable Rondo says, it's not, we don't want to challenge the Constitutional Court, but also we are the Parliament and we are the legislator. We need to rise to that moment of, out of the confusion, we need to be able to say this is what we're going to be doing to resolve the type of tensions that are there. So we'll ask you, Mr. Vanara, on behalf of this committee to go into that presentation or what was, the court judgment that has been presented to the department for all these years in relation to this matter, and come and give us guidance of exactly what we think and what we could do as parliamentarians to help in this particular environment. Want to say something, Mr. Manelli?
Thank you, Chair. I would certainly support and welcome such a discussion, or the discussion proposed by the Honourable Member. And I think it's probably possible for us to find a solution or an alternative within the provisions of the Constitution. And so I would also welcome the advice of our legal advisor about what space there is to manoeuvre within the provisions of the Constitution. Because I do think that in the wake of what happened at the Union Building, this is a unique moment where there's cross-party support and a big appetite to simply put military unions out of business. And I think that we should take this opportunity to take a very careful look at this matter. Thanks.
No, I mean, listening to different parties yesterday, it's very clear that we are all concerned. And it's not just a concern about unionization, but it's within the levels of military discipline, which is also a constitutional matter, which is that the minister has had a good view about it, that it's only this institution that we are presiding over, the defense that is committed, that has been committed by the constitution for it to do and remain disciplined. So if we don't rise to that moment ourselves, we must then say parliament must kiss them goodbye, because we don't know our own responsibility. We either end up being union members and we then run around sorting out those issues. But where ourselves and the constitutional court, I mean, seems to be at loggerhead of us. We're not yet at loggerhead, but practically the way they've interpreted the constitution put us at loggerhead with them. We'd have to solicit guidance within the institution where we are working from, which is parliament, so that we can enter the debate with fairly informed and quite clear in our minds that what are we calling for. Which means that partly that after we've been guided, as I understand, Honorable Lord, that after we've clarified ourselves, we might also be forced to engage the constitutional people, I mean judges, around this particular matter in the way we would view ourselves. So what we need to do is to begin working on the processes that would follow from there. I would really appreciate if members would take it quite seriously, because it's worrying the citizenship of South Africa. And we should not talk in disparity as members. We should talk in a very clearer way that what are we going to do as an institution, as parliament. Mr. Banara, we'll rely on your guidance next week, Wednesday, for you to, we know we're putting you under pressure, but we'll have to do that. If the department does have some views, if you are committed, you could send somebody to come in and be part of the discussion. Is that okay, members? That's fine. I wanted to give you a comment. That's fine. Gentlemen from the Navy, we had discussed this matter in your absence. We didn't hear anything. There's some spooks were seated around here, not you yourself. But we won't go into that matter. Ministry, you can... Mandy is going to write a formal letter to inform you that we are going to start that discussion. If you would want to have some contribution from the ministry, you would advise. You see. But it's a parliamentary debate amongst ourselves as different parties as to where do we go in this particular environment after we've listened to the ministry yesterday. You see. And some of the different constitutional or different judges that have taken place, judgments that have taken place within the department around this particular area. That's where we are going. So that we can recommend to the speaker and recommend to everybody that what should Parliament do in this present environment. Can I really thank you, members? Can I thank the SNDF for coming over and bring us on board on the issue that is quite sensitive? SecDef, can we still thank you? And we'll see each other next week, Tuesday, when we finalize your component and take up the other matter. Thank you, members, and thank you, everybody.
I wonder if I could ask you, would we possibly get a copy of your presentation, the electronic version, for the Parliament to monitor? Okay.
Yeah, we've got it on it. She's got everything now.
Okay.
All the old school fit, all the anecdotes.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Good morning, Arnold. I'm a fellow director from the Parliamentary Monitor. Yes. Good morning, sir. How are you? So you're the Secretary of Defense?
Yes.
Yes, I'm happy to meet you, sir. Thank you. Thank
you.
Same to you, yes. I'm wondering if I can ask for copies of the electronic version of the presentation. I've got the permission from the...
Okay.